back, the bad boys of liberal talk radio. This is Tommy Mack in Los Angeles.
And Bart in Oklahoma.
So, Bart, tell me, what's new and improved with you?
Boy, there's so much going on, maybe we ought to get right to it.
I'm down for that. What's up?
The Bush boy is having his worst week, I guess, ever. I think yesterday was the worst day he's probably had as president, and I enjoyed every damn bit of it.
It's kind of like, you know, the best movie you've ever seen. Just watching the whole administration squirm under the testimony of Dick Clark. Life is good right now.
Well, yeah, I agree. It's fun to watch them just squirm like worms. I ought to title today's issue that, but squirm like worms, because they're in a whole lot of trouble. They've got the truth against them, and people are asking, excuse me, can we have the truth? So they're in trouble.
Wacky thing that truth can be.
Because of the subscribers, I don't have a day job, so I was able to watch most of the proceedings on live TV. And I'll tell you, it was riveting. I don't remember what it was like during Watergate, but I watched a little bit of the Iran-Contra when that was live, but this was better. This is life and death for thousands. And Bush is very, very guilty, and they're pointing fingers at him, and they're demanding answers, and they're stuck. I'll tell you who's the most fun of all, and that's our little friend Condi Rice.
The fact is, by refusing to testify, she's making her situation a lot worse. And of course, she goes on 5 different shows in one day to try to give her side of the story. But of course, she's not under oath when she's on those shows. Why won't she testify under oath, huh?
Because she can't. And I think you've crystallized the point exactly. She has a 100-degree diametrically. She has a 180-degree diametrically opposed view of what happened with Clark, but Clark's willing to go under oath and testify. It doesn't work that way, Condi. If you say you got the truth, then get the hell up there and get under oath on live TV where you can be held accountable if you get caught lying. Clark is willing to do that, and you're not. So the credibility meter swings his way big time.
That's astounding. And you know what's also weird about Condi Rice? Come on, the lady makes hundreds of millions of dollars. Can't she fix her teeth? I'm unemployed and I got braces recently. Damn, girl.
Yeah, I agree. Remember, she was in the oil business. They named a giant oil tanker after her. I guess it was the Condoleezza Rice. I went and spelled it out all the way. You know, and haven't you always wondered, why does she need 2 E's and 2 Z's in Condoleezza?
Because she wants to be condescending.
Ooh. That Mac Witt.
Hey, I tell you, I'm full of it.
But yeah, today's show has got quite a bit of audio in it. There's nothing like hearing the guy's own words to put the nails in Bush's coffin, and I think he did a damn good job.
What's really blowing my mind is all the conservatives and the Republicans trying to trash Richard Clark. Now, people must remember, he started working with Reagan. He's worked with Reagan, Bush Sr., Clinton, Bush. The guy is not a partisan politician. He's a career server for the government. The guy's, you know, as level as there is. And this book, he has nothing really gained from anything here. People say, well, he's trying to push his book. You know what? His book could have just skewered Clinton. He probably would have sold more. The guy has got nothing to gain. If anything, he actually admits he failed. But Republicans just can't get through their head that maybe what this guy is saying is the truth, because any time you attack Bush by, you know, speaking the truth, well then, that person's got to be wrong.
We know it's a very tragic situation that we're looking at, but it's funny how there are moments of humor involved, and one of them is when Richard Clark says there were no meetings held. Condi jumps up and says, of course there was. There was lots of them. We just didn't invite you. The senior terrorism expert in our administration wasn't invited to the terrorism meetings.
Zoinks!
If you cut out the crap, what she's saying is, you're right, we didn't hold... Yeah, we held a bunch of meetings when you weren't there, which means we held no meetings. Or maybe while she was tutoring the young Bush boy on how to say Aznar, she went ahead and mentioned to him something about, oh, the terrorism people, yada, yada, yada. And Bush said, hey, I'm busy. Watch this drive.
Maybe they held the meetings in the space between her 2 front teeth. Now, if anyone's got a problem with me name-calling people, I don't pretend to be Rush Limbaugh, says, I never call names. He does, but he says he doesn't. Well, you know what? I do, so screw you.
Well, you know, bottom line, if they want to get through this, what we need is Bush and Rice, both under oath, live and accountable.
Sounds like a vegetarian dish, doesn't it? Would you like some Bush and Rice?
But until Rice and Bush, your favorite dish, until they agree to testify under oath, there's always going to remain unanswered questions, and the conspiracy theorists are going to have a field day. Clark has opened up a big, giant door here, and all the normal people and the wacko people now, they've got a big giant door here for them to walk through, and when they say, oh, that could never happen, well, then why can't Bush and Rice testify under oath? Remember, they made Clinton testify under oath about his girlfriends from the 80s, that no, this is murder, this is world war, this is $12 trillion missing from the Treasury. Why would we bother to put anyone under oath? There's no breasts here, there's no titty, there's no cock in the conversation. Why do we need to get to the truth if there's no sex? That's what our government tells us. I think it's ridiculous.
I agree with you there.
All right, what else we got?
I don't know.
I have a newspaper in front of me with things circled.
And it's not the crossword?
There you go. All right, from just one page, greatest newspaper in my hand, USA Today. High Court grills pledge plaintiff. My good friend, Michael Newdow, had his picture on
Dr.
the...
Dr. Michael Newdow, yeah.
Had his picture on the paper yesterday. I can solve this whole thing as always. I can solve this, not as always, but often. I can solve this whole deal in under a minute. Here's what you do. If school starts at 9 o'clock, you have the pledge at 10 till. It's that damn simple. If you want to, if it's important to you to say the pledge and under God, get to school 10 minutes early. If the school bus dumps you at 8:45, the kids that want to say the pledge, the kids that want to pledge their loyalty to God along with their country, let them run the hell into the school building and start pledging. Meanwhile, the others can stand outside, chew some gum, smoke a cigarette, maybe get a little oral sex, get their day started the right way, and then at 9 o'clock they go in. But they're afraid to do that because all the kids are going to stand outside. Why trade 15 minutes of freedom to go inside to recite a pledge that doesn't frankly mean a lot to a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old? I mean, sure, if you're deploying to Iraq, that pledge means a whole damn lot to you. I mean, this is your ass. This is your life. But if you're, you know, you're going to say the pledge five times a day for 40 weeks a year for 15 years of your life, you know, skipping one just doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
Well, first off, I almost wish I was in grade school and I knew what I know now, because then I'd pass most of my tests as opposed to fail them. But besides that, if I was doing the pledge right now, I would scream different words every time I came to under God. I'd say, one nation underwater with liberty and justice for our. One nation under poodle snot, and they can't do anything to me.
Under Shirley Manson.
Yeah, under Shirley Manson. You know, let's take this a little further back. You know, obviously, I'm totally for separation of church and state. We're trying to build a secular government in Iraq, but we can't get one here. Lovely. But if you really think about it, the Pledge of Allegiance is almost kind of scary in its sense. Okay, you're forcing all these kids. You're not forcing now, because a recent Supreme Court decision said it was unconstitutional to force kids to say it. But you kind of are in schools. It's kind of like brainwashing or indoctrinating. It's like, you must pledge allegiance to this flag. You must do it, this flag. You must pledge all your allegiance to it. I love my country, but I love the freedom to be myself and not have to do things like that.
You know what might make as much or more sense as reciting the pledge every day? Because, you know, if you do it every day, you know, it's an obstacle. It's the things that we're going to do here. Okay, let's get the pledge out of the way. Yeah, pledge next. It would seems like it would make a lot more sense to maybe take a half hour a month in school to just go over a little bit of patriotism about why it's important to vote, why it's important to do jury duty, why it's important to keep an eye on your elected leaders so they don't get you into some damn war that you're not supposed to be in. It just would make more sense to talk about. And at the end of that half hour, then recite the pledge. Everybody's in a yeah, let's go America mood. Then say the pledge when it means something. But in the morning, it really means very little. Number two.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. How cowardly of the whore court. I think they're going to tell Newdow to go away, because this is not a court of logic or law or precedent. It's a court of, gee, Mr. Bush, what would you like us to do? And he's going to say, oh, yeah, let's keep it in there. But instead of deciding this on constitutional grounds or logic or anything, now they're trying to make a big deal of, well, maybe Newdow doesn't actually have custody, so maybe we ought not to address this issue. What a bunch of cowardly bastards. The Supreme Court, have you ever in your life, well, besides Democrats in the Senate, have you ever seen such a cowardly group in your life? They are constantly looking for reasons to avoid making decisions, unless it involves Bush, and then they jump in without being asked. Oh, excuse me, stop the vote, no counting, this is America. I just hate that about them. On this same page, underneath the Newdow story, they do the Scalia story, and they mention how he gave a speech last year ridiculing anybody who thinks that the phrase under God doesn't belong in the Constitution. But If Under God is such a good idea, why don't we add it to everything? Why don't we have Betty Crocker recipes under God? Why don't we have CSI under God tonight? Why don't we have the basketball tournament under God? Why don't we have Bush is going to lie to a State of the Union under God? I mean, let's attach it to every damn thing. Put it on the stop sign. Stop under God. Put it on everything in the world. If it's a useful thing that belongs everywhere, then why don't they just smear it around like paint? It's ridiculous to attach it to the Constitution. It's kind of like Microsoft and bundling. If you want our product, if you want the United States, you got to take the God with it. It's like, no, we just want just the Constitution. We'll choose our own religion, but, you know, and they're trying to bundle them together.
Yep, and I still love to this day when people say, well, this country was found on Christian principles. And I say, oh, you mean slavery, inequality for women, the genocide of a native race, and things like that? Yeah.
I think the big point is they got on the damn boats in the first place to get away from government religion. Now they come over here and say, let's have a government religion.
It's wonderful.
It's like, hey, Sparky, why'd you build the boat? Why'd you get on the damn boat and risk your life on a flat earth to go over to America for the same religious tyranny that you tried to escape? That's crazy.
Well, you know, on the same vein, I also think In God We Trust on our currency shouldn't be there. It used to be E Pluribus Unum, which makes a lot more sense. That's cool.
Well, yeah, and I've heard idiots, parentheses, Republicans, say, oh, if you don't like Under God, then don't spend any money. Like, yeah, great thinking. That's just exactly the type of argument you should be advancing to make your point, which they don't have a point, so they have to cheat. Oh, one thing before we get off of Scalia, it sounds a little weird.
Okay.
He's getting out of the Newdow case because there's no money in it, but he's staying on the Cheney case because there's lots of money there. The thing that Cheney has before him is, back in before 9/11, Cheney was showing Iraqi oil field maps to Kenny Boy and these other big oil people, and they had decided before 9/11 that they were going to take Iraq and divide up the fields. They were divvying up the loot before they robbed the bank, and that's what one of the things, one of the many, many, many things that Cheney's trying to hide. And Scalia's got to be there to steer things Cheney's way. Scalia's as much in the BFEE as anybody. And he's going to have his cushy job when, at any time, he can retire, and they'll give him a spot over at the Carlyle Group, and he'll make $15-20 million a year, and he can go out big time, as Cheney would say.
And not only that, Scalia, what's up with your hair? Okay, you're balding in front. Shave it or do something else. Get some freaking plugs if you want it. It looks like you got plugs, you numbnuts.
Speaking of plugged,
yeah,
I'd like to mention a little bit about the trouble in Colorado with Kobe Bryant and that girl. That girl. And as always, I don't know. I wasn't there. Unlike the Clinton attackers, I wasn't in the room, so I don't know what happened. But I'm just saying, I'm going to read you a little quote from this. You know how they get these retired prosecutors to explain what's going on in the trial? It says here, Craig Silverman, a former Denver prosecutor, said, there's no way the prosecutor can prevail if the judge allows testimony that the woman had sex with another man between the alleged rape and her report. Now, taking out of everything, whether or not she's guilty or innocent, if she wants to claim rape, but she had sex with another guy. But I mean, when you show up, this sounds just so bad enough. If the girl is innocent and was a victim, I feel so sorry for her. But when you show up with evidence of three different men in your underwear for the rape examination, it just looks so bad.
Yeah, it does. And, just between you and me, Bart, let's get off this story.
Well, I understand, and the worst part about the story is, a little bit like Israel, people were unable to talk about it without, you know, the volcano shooting out the top of their head, but until they get a verdict, and even after, it's going to be, you know, it's the elephant in the room, we can't avoid it, we can choose to ignore it, but it's a big, big story, and with a sensational, oh my God, that can't be possible aspect of it, like three men in her pants, that, I mean, yeah, we're not going to do it daily. We probably hadn't mentioned it in, hell, maybe 10 shows. I don't know.
Well, see, I live in Los Angeles, and I hate the Lakers, so I could care less what happens to any of them.
Well, yeah, I imagine you're getting saturated with it. They hardly mention it here. I mean, sure, if I watch the national news, they'll mention it, but locally, they couldn't care less.
To me, Kobe is a type of beef. especially served by Japanese steakhouses. Mmm, good. Now that's what's good about the world, not some alleged rape case in Colorado.
All right, let's get on to something else.
Okay.
Condi Rice. You know, I'm going to beat on her for a while if there's some Condi Rice lovers out there.
Because you can't handle the tooth. That's my Condi joke.
I turned the page on the USA Today, and here's another story that I have to mention.
Okay.
She keeps repeating again and again, we had no way to know. How in the world could we know that they were going to hijack these planes? It just wasn't possible to know. But do you remember the James Woods story?
Yep, I do. He actually did the same flight from Boston to L.A. or back and forth. And he flat out said, look, these guys are planning something. Maybe not on this trip, but these three guys I've been watching, they're not right.
Exactly.
And turned out to be them. Doing a dry run.
Yeah, he went to the stewardess and said, I think we're about to be hijacked. These four guys over here, they're giving each other weird signals. I can just tell you, just look at them. I mean, they're not talking, they're not reading a paper, they're just paying attention and giving each other these little looks and signals. And he said, I think they're going to hijack the plane. And she said, okay. When they landed, the FBI talked to him. They had the damn names. They had, I don't know if Otter was on the plane, but they had the names of the guys that they were using. You can't get on a plane without an ID, I think even back then, right? Yeah, because the greedy airlines, say I buy a ticket somewhere, and all of a sudden, you know, whatever, I hurt my knee, I can't leave the house. Mrs. Bart can't go there in my stead. The airline won't allow a never-convicted American taxpayer to take my place. Now, funny, remember you flew out here on my frequent flyer miles. Funny, those are transferable, but if I make a reservation to go somewhere, someone else can't take it. So that means the FBI, for a fact, nobody can refute this. The FBI, for a fact, had the four names of those guys. Why the hell didn't they track them? If they're taking this same flight, at the very least, they could have put those names in the computer. And next time those guys signed up for the same flight, they could have put some kind of marshal on there to just look at them, see what's going on. They could have secretly put an armed guy on there, and when they jump up and start slashing throats, pow, pow, pow. It's, of course it was preventable. And
I agree with you.
And of all people, James Woods. He's on the Tonight Show telling this story. And I apparently, you and I are the only two people that remember the damn thing. But the Tonight Show has 10 or 12 million viewers and on a hypercharged subject like this, and nobody remembers it. And Condi is out there every day. How could we possibly have known? We never had a clue. It all snuck up on us, but we were doing our jobs, you know. The guys that were asleep outside the Ford Theater when they shot Lincoln, did they all get medals? Did they get to keep their jobs? I don't know. Not funny, but the families, the 9/11 families, this is something else we're going to come up, we're going to hear in some audio, unless you've already heard it. The 9/11 families are in the committee room while this testimony is going on. Let me see if I can read this here. But to the families of people who died in terrorist attacks, the hearing was their small victory. They campaigned for creation of the commission and pressed for public testimony. Bush fought this every way he could. He said, no, we don't need a commission. There's nothing wrong. We did everything perfect. And then they pressed him. Finally, he gave in. And then he said, but not public. And they pressed him and finally gave in. And he said, but I won't testify. And then they pressed him. Finally said, okay, I'll testify for an hour. And then they pressed him. Kerry said, if you got time to go to a damn rodeo, why can't you give more than an hour to these 9/11 peoples? Right on, Mr. Kerry. I'm voting for that son of a gun.
Absolutely.
But this idiot Bush, he's up there. They're all fighting tooth and nail. Please don't find out what we did. Please don't look at what's behind door number two. And the Democrats, of course, they just take it.
Well, they're Democrats.
And, okay, tying this one up here, got a quote for you. This lady says, I'm glad we got these people here today, said Ann McCrae, 56, who lost her daughter in the World Trade Center. The people include George Tenet, who described his agency's action before 9/11, and Richard Clark, who made this controversial case. I can't believe Condi Rice is not here, McRae said, expressing her disapproval of the White House refusal to send the Condi Rice over. Did you know, I saw in today's paper, it says they exercise White House prerogative.
White House prerogative?
Fuck that! White House prerogative! What the hell does that have to... Prerogative, remember Bobby Brown? Prerogative is your choice. They chose not to testify. They chose to hide, or they're still choosing to hide
that's
the facts.
That's eerily like executive privilege.
Oh, no, it's worse than that. Executive privilege can be a real thing, you know.
But why didn't Clinton get this kind of treatment? If he had said something like, I'm not going to testify because of White House prerogative, he would have been thrown out of office.
The Supreme Court, in every case, ruled against Clinton. They didn't care what the law was. Remember, they had Clinton's lawyers testify against him. I'm not a judicial, historical researcher guy. But I don't think that's ever happened before. You don't get to tell someone, you don't put the defendant's lawyer on the stand and say, tell us what you talked about, but that's what they did to Clinton. I think they did everything to Clinton except make Hillary testify against him. I think the women in the country might get a little pissed off about that. So the Supreme Court, or that they didn't never ask for that, but the crooked Supreme Court gave every time the contest was between Clinton and the law or what the rabid raping wolves wanted, they always went with the rapid raping wolves.
Well, try to say that one more time, Bart. Jeez.
Every time the choice came down to between Clinton and the law or the rapid... The every time
I'm not going to edit this out. I'm going to leave this in. This is really comedy here.
I'll try
move
to
on. You're not going
to
get this right. You're not going to get it right. Move
on. One more. Every time the choice came down to Clinton and the law or these raping dogs that were trying to attack him, the Supreme Court always ruled with the raping dogs, and I hate them for that. Turning the page.
Yes.
Oh, here we go. Ready to be mad?
Like I'm not already.
Study. Army must do more to prevent suicides. U.S. soldiers have committed suicide at a higher than usual rate during the invasion and occupation of Iraq, and the Army must do more to prevent it. More than 60% of the soldiers in Iraq reported low morale. That's not what they've told us all this time. Saw Dan Rather a week ago. He was over there, surprisingly upbeat. You might find a pocket of dissension here and there. But now the Army releases their own figures, says 60% of the soldiers report low morale. And the reason these guys are shooting themselves is because they signed up for, 2 weeks a year and a weekend a month? And now they're over in Iraq for 2 years, their kids are growing up, they're getting shot at, they saw their friend die? Of course their morale is low and they're contemplating suicide. Hell, if nothing else, you know a lot of them are shooting themselves in the foot or the arm or something just so they can get a ticket home.
Yeah, what's astounding is that we are not going to have Army Reserves after all of this. No one's going to want to join the Reserves or National Guard ever again, because in the past, this is so unprecedented. Nothing like this has ever happened before, especially for a war that didn't need to be fought. I mean, if it was like World War II, that's something. But this is not like that.
It's always a bad idea to deplete your reserves in anything that you ever do. And that's just what he's done. He's wiped out his backup.
Yep.
Always crazy. Okay. Here we got a headline. Deserter and the cheese-eating surrender monkey to meet for D-Day commemoration. Actually, I made that headline up, but Bush and Chirac are getting together for the June 6th invasion anniversary. And it reminds me, well, again, you got the deserter and the surrender monkey. They're going to get together and honor the men that died. Now, I got no beef with Chirac. He's the guy who tried to take the car keys out of the drunken Bush boy's hand when he insisted on driving drunk. But no, they didn't listen to Bush didn't listen to his good friend Chirac. No, he just decided to go ahead and jump in the car, and we got, 10,000 dead? But these two guys now, Bush the deserter and the guy he calls the surrender monkey, are going to get together and honor honorable men who died. That sounds like a headline to me.
Yep.
And why in the hell should Chirac forgive Bush for encouraging all this freedom fries and the surrender monkey and the, you know, to this day, they're calling...
And insulting them as old Europe.
Well, yeah, but even to this day, he's over there trying to make friends with Chirac, while at the same time, Bush and his talk radio Nazis are calling John Kerry, they say he looks French. Like the ultimate insult. You know, he looks French. Like, oh my God, did you say that? Those are fighting words. That's how bad Kerry is. He looks French.
We know the truth is, the ultimate insult is to be conservative. It means closed-minded, narrow-browed, knuckle-dragging, throwback to Neanderthals.
I hate them. All right, here we got another headline. Democrats showcase party unity. Former rivals will share stage to defeat Bush. Now, here's a picture of Kerry and that monkey Lieberman. I drew a big T for traitor on Lieberman's forehead. It belongs there. You know, he's just the favorite over at Fox. Well, whatever they're doing at Fox, breaking story or whatever, if Lieberman drops by, which he does often, move everything out the way. This is the good Democrat, the one that hates his own party and wishes he was a Republican.
Mr. Turtlehead himself, Joe Lieberman.
The story is about unity that's so rare in the Democratic Party. I'd like to read you a little bit.
Okay.
In 2000, Republicans were united, and as usual, the Democrats stabbed each other in the back repeatedly. This year may be different. Two Republican senators, McCain and Hagel, recently defended Kerry against the Bush characterization of him as weak on defense. Some Republicans expressed concern about the deficit during Bush's tenure, others about the failure to find WMD. Log Cabin Republicans is running an ad protesting Bush's support for an amendment to ban same-sex marriages. There's no question there's some drumbeat against Bush from Republicans, says Scott Reed. You know, he's religiously insane, a Republican strategist. But Bush has screwed up his own party so bad, and he screwed up the world and the country and the economy and the war, everything so bad that even the United Republicans are saying, hey, we got to pull this guy back in. And how many times have I said a Republican is going to save us from Bush because the Democrats are all too scared?
I was always under the impression that we'd all be saved from Bush by a pretzel. I was almost right.
Buy pretzels.
Exactly. We should all. Who was it that said we should all send pretzels to the White House?
Well, see, I haven't said anything like that because I'm afraid Ashcroft would consider that a death threat.
Life is good.
That's all they need, an excuse. Come get old Bart. All right?
Yep.
Let's talk about Microsoft for a second.
Microsoft, the big monopoly.
The European Union ruled that they got to pay $613 million because they're such lying, aggressive, competitive, throat-slitting bastards. And they're saying this may put a chill on America doing business overseas. They're saying this may slow down globalization because Microsoft is so greedy. Why can't they just rein that greed in a little bit?
I agree. You know, I'm kind of mixed on this. If you're making the operating system, you shouldn't be able to make software, application software, because you, by definition, have an extreme advantage that other software developers don't have. The reason why all the other word processors are gone is because they couldn't compete against Microsoft Word. Not that Microsoft Word was a better program, it's just that it had all the advantages of knowing what was going to be in the code for the operating system long in advance. That is anti-competitive behavior. But we also know, and several studies have shown, that basically America's dependence on Microsoft Windows is now considered a security threat.
Oh, God.
I'll try to find that story, and we'll see if we can talk about that sometime in the future, because I don't have all my facts in front of me. And unlike the vulgar pig boy, I'd rather not just spout about something I don't know.
Well, hey, I'd like to say something about something I don't know much about. I don't know, Jack, about how computers work, but it's my understanding that the charge against Microsoft is not that their, for instance, their media player works better than the other guy. It's no, they intentionally write code into the software that disables the other guy.
Oh, yes. That's happened many times before. There was a program called WinSock, which is very popular. And I think when Windows 95 or 98 came out, 95 came out, it would automatically go in there, find this popular program called WinSock, deactivate it, and install the Windows version of that program. It's like, damn!
Well, it reminds me of, say, General Motors. What if they also sold tires, and they put rims on their cars that would hold no other tire but their own, you know? And it's not only that they did that because the other tire makers could adapt, but they put on some flexible, you know, at some point in the future, your rims are going to increase by a half inch and the tire is going to come off. I mean, to sabotage the competition, it just seems so un-American. I don't see how they can get away with it. Number two, you'll have to remember the Pepsi taste test.
Yep.
Years ago, long time, like maybe in the 60s, I think they brought it back a couple of times, but they would do, I don't know if these were live, probably not, but they would set up like in a supermarket, two colas with the wrapped up.
I remember it well.
And they would give you a shot of each, and you tell them which one's better. And now, I think now and then they'd say Coke just to make it, you know, it would come out like 80-20, you know, now and then they'd say Coke just to make you think it was real.
Mm-hmm.
But why the hell can't Microsoft do that? Why don't they could have a deal where when you install Windows or whatever, when you turn on your computer, they could say, hey, we'll give you a $5 rebate if you take the following test. Try our media player and then try Real Player or whatever others. And if you like ours better, no, we'll pay you the $5 just to take the test. If you like the Real Player better, fine. Then click here to make Real Player your default. But if you think ours works better, click here. Now see how fair that is. And it's not only fair, but it proves it's like the taste test. You can pick either one you want. You like this one better? Fine. Drink that one. Use that one. Why can't Microsoft, if they have a better product, why can't they fight fair like that?
Because they can't. Remember, Bill Gates has never developed anything original. He really hasn't. Microsoft has not once developed something that they did not copy from someone else and did it worse.
I've heard that. All right, let's get back to some more outrage.
Okay.
This is on the money section. That's where I got that Microsoft stuff. Report. Oh, are you sitting down? I guess you are.
Oh, yeah.
Report. Iraq contracts didn't follow the rules. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says 22 of the 24 deals that the military made with people like Halliburton, they didn't follow the rules. They didn't, there's lack of price controls, poor planning. Out of 24 deals the military did with the BFEE, they followed procedure on two of them. The other 22 are just wild, black budget, don't ask, pieces of crap that have emptied the treasury. I wish more people could see this, but the reason America's in such a hole, the reason we're in such a deficit, and nobody's got jobs, and the economy's crashing and everything's going bad is because Bush gave all that stuff away without any accountability.
If an individual breaks the law, he goes to jail. But if a corporation breaks the law, nothing happens as long as Republicans are in charge.
But the worst thing is, because of the sackless Democrats, what Bush is doing is legal. He said, hey, I got to have the power to move. We can't be mamby-pambying around with a bunch of rules here when I got a war to win. And Democrats said, sure, George, whatever you need. So then he's legally, hell, he can legally murder people. But in just this case, he can legally award these multi-billion dollar contracts to Halliburton. And we don't even know. Remember, we didn't know about the $2 billion food allowance in the last show. $2 billion per month.
That's a lot of grub.
We didn't even know about that. Until it kind of slipped out when they got fined for stealing and lying. It just keeps going on. All right, what else we got?
I don't know. What else do we have, Bart?
All right, got some outrage for you now. Headline.
What we need is more outrage, Bart.
Lots of it with these bastards.
By the way, is there such thing as inrage? And if not, could I trademark it like Trump is trying to trademark you're fired?
I think inrage is what you get when Clinton's president.
That's right.
Headline, Dems win dispute on overtime pay rules. Action delayed on trade feud with European Union. They talk about, Senate Democrats delivered a victory to white-collar workers fearful of losing overtime pay. They successfully blocked legislation to consider the Bush administration proposed changes to rules for overtime pay. Now, first thing, when Bush is changing overtime pay, that means he's eliminating it.
It's amazing how Republicans have always said, too much overtime will kill a company, or they always fight minimum wage. And every time minimum wage goes up, it's better for the economy. But every time they fight it, saying it's going to cost us jobs. And right now they're saying, we got to get rid of overtime pay. Well, not get rid of it, but cut it back. It's just astounding.
Yeah, Clinton increased minimum wage. And he created 22 million jobs. And so Bush says, no, we need to fix it. We need to cut overtime and reduce the minimum wage to create jobs. And he loses 3 million. And then the voters say, oh, I like what Bush has done with the economy. All right, but trust me, when Bush wants to work on overtime pay, that means slash or eliminate. And he should be.
And this is from the president who only works, I would say, 20 hours a week.
Really, exactly. The guy would take a month-long vacation, doesn't want other people to work.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can bet anytime Bush is going to help the white-collar people, I'm sorry, anytime Bush is going to help the working man, there's going to be a lot of KY involved, so be ready with yours.
I think with Bush, we can actually coin a new term. There's blue collar, there's white collar, and then there's gold collar.
There you go.
And I don't think he's helping the white collar people either. I think it's the gold collar, the multimillionaires, the contributors, the pioneers to Republicans, those people. That's what Bush is really representing, gold collar people.
But the worst is yet to come. We ain't even got to the outrage yet.
Okay.
Next paragraph. The overtime defeat stalled Republicans' plans for a vote on sweeping legislation aimed at cutting corporate taxes again.
Wait.
He's going to cut the corporate taxes again. He gave Microsoft
He's cutting corporate taxes again? As if they're paying too much right now?
He gave Microsoft $7 billion. And who'd they hire? Nobody. He gave GE $5 billion. Who'd they hire? Nobody. He gave GE $4 or $5 billion. Who'd they hire? Nobody. And now he wants to cut their taxes again. That's how we got in this damn mess.
Corporate welfare. You gotta love it.
Clinton showed them how you do it. You raise taxes 1.5% on the super rich, and that includes GE, Microsoft, Ford, Halliburton, and that balances the budget, and then the little guy gets a break. When Wall Street sees that you're serious about working with the deficit, they have confidence in you. Wall Street refuses to bet on this monkey because they know he's ruining the economy.
And Dick Cheney actually defended corporations who set up offshore to avoid corporate income taxes by saying, well, if corporate taxes were cheaper in our country, maybe they wouldn't leave. Well, you know what? Even if they get their tax cuts, I bet you they're not going to return their headquarters to native lands here.
It's already after the fact, though. They have given these guys major, major billion-dollar tax cuts, and then they leave.
Greedy corporate bastards.
It just makes no sense. If I say, Tommy, here's $4,000. Why don't you buy yourself a computer? And you say, okay. And then you go buy some cocaine and snort it. And then I say, see how well that worked? That wouldn't fly with people. Disclaimer on the side, Tommy does not do cocaine. I was just trying to exemplify bad behavior.
No, I go straight for heroin these days.
Cool. You do it under the tongue or between the toes?
I got to do it between the toes because, when I go for job interviews, I'm strung out, I don't want to seem to track marks.
All right, well, hey, we could be winding down. I got one other one for you here.
Okay.
Two or three of my favorite subjects. money in gambling. But story continues. International Gaming Technology, which makes slot machines, they went from 42 to 44 after a douchebank analyst issued a positive report on their...
Wait, douchebank? That's a Deutsche Bank, Bart.
Oh, is that how you say that?
You crazy Oklahoma
brute. Oh, I know you don't watch NYPD Blue, right?
No.
Okay, Andy Sipowicz is the head character. He's a sour, grumpy, mostly racist, you know, he's just kind of a grumpy guy, but he's a great detective. He brings in the killers, so they tolerate all his bad behavior.
Okay.
He's got a new boss, and the boss shows up with a parrot. It's one, I don't know the difference between parrots, but it's one of those parrots that just whack, you know, how's it go? Whack. It just constantly, every couple seconds, just a loud shriek.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's going, oh, we got to get rid of this parrot. And the boss says, no, the parrot, he's great. You're going to love it. He'll pick up anything. If you say, how you doing to him 3-4 times, he'll say, how you doing? And you can, you know, it's like having a conversation. He's a great little parrot. You got to love it. So the whole time, the whole show, the parrot's screaming. And the gay fella, not that it matters, but the gay fella went in to check on the bird, and the bird bites the gay fella. And so Andy's thinking, oh, we got to do something about this. So this guy from the police lab, you know, one of those guys came up, and Andy whispered to him. So at the end of the show, he comes back, gives Andy a little portable tape recorder, and on the recorder it says, douchebag, douchebag, douchebag. And he puts this recorder next to the parrot and then shuts out all the lights and goes home. So this parrot all night, he's got this loop, douchebag, douchebag. So the next day, I mean, it was off camera, but the whole point is the boss comes in the next day and all his parrot can say is douchebag.
Nice.
Cool.
Excellent. That's comedy. So, is there anything else, Bart?
I don't think we can fit one more story in here. You know, we're going to run out of CD space if we talk 10 more seconds.
That's right. So we're going to wind it down here. Once again, it's been fun. Hey, this was Tommy Mack in Los Angeles.
And a very outraged Bart in Oklahoma.
And we want to thank you for subscribing to Bart Cobb Radio. We'll see you next week.